Welcome to the Coworkers Podcast with Jesse and Shaney,
where every believer is a coworker in God's mission.
All right, guys, welcome back. Good to be back with y'all. We are super excited because today we are joined by some really good friends of ours, long time, not just coworkers, but really good friends as well. So Jared and Michelle just arrived on the field shortly after us. We do have a couple months on you, but not much.
Yeah, not much.
Even though Jared looks a lot older than I do. So it's okay. Look, you look like you've been here longer, Jared, but Michelle, you look pretty much the same. So
that's true.
That's what people say about me. Don't worry. They say the same thing about me, Jared. But we're super excited to have you guys, man. Excited for people to hear from you, like we were talking about just as we were chatting before we started. You all have lived this so well for the past 19 years, like in ways that very few of our coworkers, I could say, that I have seen them live it out. So just the what we're going to be talking about today, specifically finding national partners and investing in them. I really can't think of anybody globally that I know that has done a more faithful job of that than you all have. So really excited for you guys to be with us. Excited for people to hear about you.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having us. We're excited to be here.
We got to have Jared speak at one of our meetings recently. Would have preferred to have Michelle along also, but it was such an impactful session that we wanted for more people to be able to benefit from it. And just this topic that is one of the most important skills for us on the field is how to find, I'm putting that in quotes, how to find national partners, how to develop national partners, and some of the myths that sometimes we have when we come on the field and expectations that we have.
Such a crucial question for us, I think, because like Shaney said, working alongside of national partners, that is, in a lot of ways, kind of the core of what we do. Yes, we're sent out to share the gospel, to make disciples of all nations, to see churches planted and multiplied, but none of that ever happens unless we're working alongside of local people. We've talked about for a long time in our part of the world and also on our teams and on this show about local ownership. That's really what it's all about. And that's from the very beginning of the work, not just kind of we get to this point and then we hand things over. But as you all know and have lived out, man, we're just doing that from the very beginning stages of the work. So especially for new people sometimes, and even sometimes for us old timers, thinking through, man, how do we recruit, choose, come alongside of, develop all of those things, national partners? That's really what we're going to be digging into.
Okay? Yeah. And just to help our listeners place you all, Jared and Michelle, also from the beautiful state of Missouri, and have been serving in South Asia almost 20 years. And have a healthy family, four awesome kids, and have gone through a lot of ups and downs in the work and in their family life. And so just so many topics we could interview you guys on, but just wanted to help our listeners know a bit more about who's talking.
That's right. I think a lot of people come to the field with some misconceptions about what are the things you're looking for and how to find a national partner. What are some of those misconceptions, maybe unrealistic expectations or pitfalls that you have seen and why?
Jesse, probably the topic as a whole, I think there's a lot of misconceptions around it just at the 40,000 foot level, even looking through what is a national partner, even starting at that basic level. National partners are inherently nationals. So when we come to a place like South Asia, we're looking for South Asians to work with. And sometimes that initial misconception is, man, my team is going to be made up of people with my same skin color. No. We need to even reorient our thinking about team. Our team is made up of nationals so that, yeah, I might have a team of four or five other missionaries that I'm working with from the West, but they're developing their own teams of nationals. And even thinking about national partners from the get-go as being, this is the team that God has given me in this place, no matter if they're great. You know, they started 1,000 churches, or man, this is a brand new believer that was led to faith last week. Starting with that, even that basic fundamental understanding of how do we think about our job? I think you hit the nail on the head, even just introducing the topic. But I think one of my first misconceptions really comes down to the idea that I'm going to walk into South Asia and find this perfect partner. And I hear that type of thing a lot, that, the old timers, as you called us, you let us go to the States. We're going to cast vision. Come join our team because, man, we get to work with national partners that have seen 1,000 churches and they're doing these things well. And you can learn these types of things from them. And looking for that perfect partner, I think a lot of folks come to the field with that understanding that somewhere out there, there's this Pauline guy that's just ready for me to walk into his life. He's got perfect theology already. He already knows exactly what to do. He speaks great English, and we're just going to be best friends from day one. Well, honestly, that guy doesn't exist, or maybe better yet, if he did exist, don't work with him because you'll mess him up.
That's right.
I'm not the perfect partner for him if he is the perfect partner that's out there. So I think even looking at that idea of where do these partners come from, or even recognizing on the front end that what we're looking for are just local believers that God's calling us to begin spending some time with and working with. I think that's one of the biggest misconceptions that I see.
What would you add, Michelle?
I'm not sure that I would add a lot necessarily to that, other than, yeah, exactly what Jared said. When we look at a partner, we're not looking for— I was not a perfect partner when I came to the field. I didn't know anything. I had shared the gospel actually very little in my life. I had very little theological training. I had zero idea what I was doing or how to work cross-culturally. And I had to learn and grow in that. And people were gracious and allowed me to learn and grow in that. And so, and were willing to work with me through that, nationals as well as other teammates within our own organization. And so being willing to be gracious and to walk alongside someone and to see them just as that, to see them as not just a means to an end, a means to the end of the work that we have, but as brothers and sisters in Christ. I think of how lovingly Paul talked about many of his coworkers and how they were just as sons or daughters to him or family to him. And so there, we will do ministry together, but we will also live life together, and we will love one another, and we will serve one another. And there will be times in ministry even where we might need to go different ways, and yet we can still love them as brothers and sisters in Christ. Or I think of times when even there's been moral failure and we've had to step back from ministry for a time, but we never left. We were still in one another's lives because we weren't a means to the end for either one of, you know, I wasn't somebody's paycheck and they weren't just my national partner to ministry, but we chose to enter into relationship with one another as brothers and sisters in Christ and to do life together. And so I think that's something to keep in your mind from the very beginning, that's where you need to, you know, that's where you need to head with these nationals.
Yeah. I think one other misconception that we see a lot these days, especially, is related to handoffs. I remember our first mentor, a guy you know named Jeff. He was leaving the field about 2009. So we'd been on the ground 3-4 years at that point. And I remember very distinctly a couple weeks before Jeff left, he walks a national partner by the name of Kunsong and I down this gravel road in South Asia, rural area. And he looks at Kunsong and he says, "Kunsong, Jared is the new Jeff." And, you know, that day I feel like I'm 10 feet tall. Like, man, this is great. I've just been handed his key primary partner. And in the next year, Kunsong's a great guy. There wasn't anything that happened, but we just kind of drifted apart. I think that illustrates the challenges of handoff, because I wasn't Jeff. I didn't have 10 years of walking with the guy, of working through different issues, seeing this church planting problem and the breakthrough that they saw together. I wasn't older than Kunsong like Jeff was. I couldn't be the mentor in his life. And I tried to step in to be the Jeff 2.0, and it just didn't work. And wasn't for any fault on either side, other than it just wasn't the partner for me at that junction in my life. And I think that's one of those misconceptions that we often have as we come to the field.
I think another one of the challenges, I think, or just things that we need to be aware of, is sometimes when we come to the field, we think that we're going to go and maybe to one church service and meet you know, a dozen or a couple dozen people. And in that, we're going to find the partners to do the rest of the work for the rest of our lives. And the reality is, yeah, it's just not how it happens. Yeah. We, I mean, in our first term where we were really training and looking for partners, we trained through thousands of people, and we would sit in a room and we would do a training for 2 or 3 days or sometimes longer. And so often, more often than not, probably, as Jared and I would talk after a training, and we would, you know, talk through, man, this guy seemed really engaged. Oh, this lady seemed like she was really tracking what we were saying. Oh, I think this is the, very rarely were our first impressions actually spot on. Very rarely was that the person that God was preparing. It's the God prepared person. And sometimes what we're looking at in man's eyes are these external factors that we think are going to play in. And maybe it was, you know, the little lady in the back that fell asleep. But then that month she shared with 60 people. And you were like, oh, I thought you were just there for the doll bot. And, you know, or the guy who was like openly talking about how this is never going to work. This is not happening. Like, you say it's going to do this. It's not going to work. And he was opposing you. And then 6 months later, or sometimes 3 years later, when you randomly see them in another village, you see that God's been working in their heart and doing something. And so having one, the willingness to train broadly, to look broadly for a partner, and knowing that's going to be hundreds and thousands of people that you need to meet and engage and look through, but then also being able to see them with through the eyes of the Holy Spirit to say, okay, who are you preparing that I wouldn't even see or maybe even recognize?
Yeah, that's good. I think that's a good point to highlight, is that we are bad choosers. Usually our first impressions are usually off. We are wired, especially when we're new, we're wired to look for the person with all the right answers, who's very attentive in a training setting, who, you know, that's just our natural inclination. They can answer when you ask the questions. They're very interactive. Maybe their English is really good. And we just found time and time again, it's rare that that is the person who actually turns out to be the doer or your national partner from a training setting.
Yeah. And so I think you learn over time not to write people off too quickly. Mm-hmm. I think that can be something that you're more prone to in your first term because of these wrong expectations. Mm-hmm. And I also want to just say an amen to we have seasons with different partners. You don't normally have a partner for a decade. That's not always in your control. And over time, you learn to just flow with that. And I think possibly with women, even, there might be less control or predictability about it, because women tend to have less control over their own lives. And so sometimes you have this wonderful sister that you're working with, and then she's suddenly just unavailable and you have to move on.
Yep.
Then speak to maybe especially people new on the field. How then should they frame their expectations when they're thinking about national partners? What to look for? Or how long should we expect it to take?
I think those are good questions, Shaney. I think one of the things that actually a guy that lives close to you guys, that he would often talk about, a brother by the name of Leepak. I think he's been on your show before. Leepak would always go back to 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, and he would talk about the verse that says, we didn't just give the gospel to you, but we shared our very lives. And I think that's something that really relates well to this conversation, that national partners, they don't just happen overnight. You don't walk in, you meet them, and suddenly they're your national partner for the next 3 to 4 years or anything like that. Instead, it's going to take time. It's going to take different amounts of time for different people. But how do we walk with them, and how do we share our very lives with them? A lot of times in our circles, we'll talk about things like the acronym FATTER. So faithful, available, teachable, reproducing. And we're looking for that kind of national partner. That's a great acronym, but it's, in my experience, it's almost a little bit pie in the sky. Nobody's going to have all those traits day one. I had a national partner that had bad theology. He was peace and prosperity the first time we met him. And man, that wouldn't be a guy I'd naturally partner with, but we opened up the Word of God and he started taking steps forward. And, you know, 10 years later, he's in a really healthy place when it comes to theology. Or it's the one that, man, had this young guy at 17 that I actually hired him to translate for a short-term team that came in. And the guy kind of had shifty eyes. Like, he wouldn't make eye contact with me at all. He'd never shared the gospel before. He was a musician and just kind of all over the map. And, you know, fast forward a year or two, man, that kid actually grew a lot, and he grew in confidence and boldness. And today he's leading the church planting work for an entire organization in South Asia. So those types of folks, our national partners, very, very seldom start where we want them to be. Instead, they're the, as Michelle said, they're the ones we would least expect, but suddenly God gets a hold of their heart and they gravitate towards us, and that relationship forms. And then over months and years, we start taking steps forward, and we just keep growing through some of that. So on the time frame, man, I'm going to say we're measuring this at least in months, and probably more so in years of where do good national partners come from? Well, I met 5,000 guys 3 years ago, and this is the one out of the 5,000 that I'll tell you about 5 years later, because that's the diamond in the rough.
That's good. I've heard somebody say, actually, it was Kieran, who is one of your national partners that you guys have invested a lot in. And when we had him and interviewed him here on the show, he said that if he were to take anyone's last name, it would be yours, because you all have been like a family to his.
Yeah.
And I remember he was recently training some of our leaders recently, like last year, I guess. And we were talking about fatter. You're looking for, through the fatter filter, faithful, available, teachable, reproducing. And he said, as he does, as he can do so well, just really turn that back on us. And he was like, are you a fatter, like, coach? Are you a fatter partner to this national partner that you're looking for? Are you faithful? Are you available to them? Are you also teachable? Are you humble in that way? Are you reproducing? You know, the things that we're asking them to do and to be, are we being that to them? Such a great challenge. Again, is he so good at poking us about that, you know, regardless of who we are, where we're from, but just a good perspective as well in terms of framing not just expectations for what they should be like, but what expectations for what we should be like in the midst of that process as well.
Yeah. And our brother Lepak, we always wanted him to give us a formula. Tell us the key. Tell us, missionaries, what do we need to do to raise up more church planters? And he would never answer it like we wanted. It was always things like, give them your very lives, encourage them, be there for them. Would you have anything to add to that, though, in terms of best practices for, okay, I have 10 brothers and sisters that I feel like God is just putting in my life. I see potential. You're investing in a lot of people, and you don't quite know yet who's going to become the Kieran. How do you spend your time with them?
What we would often talk about in our circles, we'll talk about spending our time really training, trying to get to the CMT, discipling them, time in the field, all that, yes. But I think the secret sauce, especially in this conversation, is all the other things as well. So to put it in practical terms, so a lot of times we'll talk about trying to spend 60 to 90 days a year with your key disciples or key national partners. Let's use that word. As such, most of us, our training paradigm encompasses about 3 days. Maybe 4 or 5 if we're really good trainers. So then that begs the question, what do I do with the other 55 to 85 days that I'm supposed to spend every year with this key partner? And that's when you go to their one-year-old's birthday party. Not because you want to go to the birthday party. It starts at 10 o'clock at night. But it's important to them, important to their family, for us to be there. And it's not strategic in quotes, right? But it is strategic for relationship building. And 3 years later, they'll say, nobody has ever come to my kid's birthday party except you. Or, you know, you start looking through different life type events. And we've had national partners that, hey, come over once a week, not for any team meeting or anything, but just come over and have dinner. And their kids and our kids play. And yeah, Pastor Nandu used to feed my two-year-old chocolate nonstop when he would come and see us, and not strategic conversation, but it was relationship building and those types of things along the way that you spend your very life with them, as 2 Thessalonians or 1 Thessalonians 2 would say. And that idea, I think we often miss in our Western-centric model of missions, that we have a task that we're after. Well, sorry, our missionary task usually doesn't happen between the hours of 8 and 5 p.m. How do we reorient around life?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think some practical things as well, that as you do a training, as you encounter somebody, just slowly taking them along to do things. You take them out into the field and say, hey, do you have time this week? You want to go out into this new place I've been wanting to try and prayer walk through and share in, and come out and watch them and just go along with them, pray with them, share in that village, and then see if they have time again. Or in the Word, you know, every time that you're getting together saying, hey, what have you been reading in the Word? Hey, do you want to look at this in the Word? I've been looking at this. And just seeing if they are becoming those things. Are they willing to engage with the Word? Are they willing to get out into the harvest? Are they willing, you know, I'm doing a training over here. Do you want to come with me? And nobody just comes ever to sit in a training. Hey, I'm doing a training over here. Will you come with me? Would you teach them on Luke 10, something simple that maybe they've already seen before, and give them a chance, you know, to teach in a training. So that principle of never doing anything alone, always bringing somebody with you. You know, there's so many things you can do on your own. You don't have to have somebody come out and prayer walk with you or share with you, or even to do a training. You could teach the content, but never do anything alone. Always have somebody coming alongside you. And as you do that, you get to see, are they willing? Do they want to? Is it kind of, oh, there's always a lot of excuses. There's just not enough time. Okay, well, maybe they're not in a place yet that they really want to commit to that. So you don't just jump into the 60 and 90 day people. You find those. And how do you find those? You find those by spending small amounts of time. And during those small amounts of time, you see that they're willing to give more time. And so then you begin to build on that, and you see whether they're able to kind of move along that course. So it takes time to see if they're going to be. And so sometimes that means you spent a little bit of time with somebody and maybe it didn't pan out. But if you only spent a little time and it didn't pan out, you didn't lose a whole lot. And so you keep doing that. And then you begin to increase the amount of time you spend with them based on what you're seeing happening in all these other areas as you begin to do those things. So I think some of those are some of the practical ways that we end up going about that.
Yeah.
It sounds to me, Michelle, how you explained it. People are in a way kind of self-selecting, like you're inviting people along. Some are going to come. Some are going to not be available. Have you had any times where you've struggled to let go of someone that you thought would be a partner, or you've struggled to see like, man, I've put a lot of time and I think I need to give up. Like, they're just not on the same page as us. I'm thinking of a time in my life where I tried and tried with this sister, and Jesse was like, how long are you going to keep trying? Like, could she doesn't want to do this.
Yeah, I think that's a huge piece. And I think even sometimes being a cross-cultural worker, it's even harder, because sometimes it's hard to discern motivation. Sometimes people want to be with you because you're a foreigner. Honestly, sometimes that we have at times, you know, filtered through people as translators. They want to be with you because you're paying them to go out and translate for a team or somebody else. And so they're kind of looking, what can you possibly give me? So it takes some time to discern. And it is one of those things that, unfortunately, right, there isn't a formula to, that we have to just spend time with the Lord and ask. And sometimes we need that outside perspective. Like I heard you saying, Jesse said to you, like, hey, how long are you going to keep doing this? Because you are personally, emotionally invested. And you're like, bye. I'm sure it's just the next conversation. Mm-hmm. Some of our personalities, you know, Jared is always, the next conversation is going to win somebody over. He is certain of it, you know, and I tend more towards the realist of like, I don't know that this is going anywhere. And so sometimes being the voice of reason to be like, I'm not sure. And then,
or the voice of reason to say, actually, give it one more conversation, honey.
Exactly. That's the thing. Sometimes it is the 5 years down the road. You're like, okay, it was worth 5 years. It was worth every one of those conversations for 5 years, because, man, it just took off. And so some is having to discern with the Lord. But I think another good question to ask yourself is, if I'm giving my time to this person or this activity, what am I not able to give my time to? And is it worth that opportunity cost? And sometimes I'm giving my time over and over and over again to something that's not moving forward at the cost of someone else. And so we've got to ask, that's a good evaluating question to kind of ask, okay, is that maybe then time to push back for a moment and then come back? And that's the other thing to remember. You can always revisit These are relationships that give it some time and space to grow and let the Lord work and then come back and revisit. It doesn't have to be left forever and always, but maybe for a season it needs to be left.
I do think sometimes we just feel bad anytime we feel like we're going to stop investing in someone. We just feel guilty because it feels unloving to us. But I think we have to kind of have a bit more reasoning involved in that, because we aren't here just to make friends. We have a job and we have something we're working towards. And so we do have to think critically about it. And we have limited hours. And if I'm giving those here, like you said, Michelle, I'm not giving them somewhere else. And sometimes you have to stop doing something and let there be a vacant spot in your schedule before you even know how it's going to be filled. Sometimes you just have to allow that gap to be there.
Yeah, that's right. I think the friend partner gap is something, that tension is something a lot of people struggle with, not just ladies, but a lot of our folks struggle with determining, man, there's somebody I really enjoy hanging out with. Maybe they are, you know, just good, faithful people, but they may not be the national partner that you're looking for. And I think a lot of people struggle with that. So you could either say, I'm just going to see this person as a friend, recognize that clearly, hang out with them, but not put those expectations on them, which could be a really healthy way to approach that. But I think that particularly for young people, I've seen they really struggle to discern, to take those steps between, hey, am I just hanging out with this person, or am I also trying to push them towards taking steps in ministry? So that kind of clarity along the way, I think, could be really good for our hearts and also just for the work. I mean, what we've been sent to do, like you said, to do a job. Yep. So you guys have an all-star lineup of national partners, knowing many of them, but a lot that we don't know. But just over the years, seeing all the folks that have come in your circle of influence, one of the most helpful things that you did in your session, Jared, was walk through kind of these profiles of these people, these national partners, what they were like when you first met them, right? And kind of what they've become, what they've grown into. So maybe walk us through a couple of those. If you have some case studies you could walk through anonymously, of course, and just say, hey, what were they like when you first met them? And what was that process like?
Okay. A couple of them that come to mind really quick. One was a 24-year-old. His birth certificate would have said 19, but he was really 24, one of those things in South Asia. So I remember him being actually at a training, sitting on the back row. And he was kind of there with the other young guys, kind of the, I would have called him a punk, because literally when we taught through Luke chapter 10, he raised his voice up and he said, you guys don't know what you're talking about in South Asia. This will not work. And we're like, okay, if it doesn't work, how about we just stop right now? Everybody break off 2x2 and let's go out and try it for an hour or two. And we go outside and he shares, or we actually share with maybe six guys, four of them come to faith that afternoon over the course of the next half hour, 45 minutes. And his jaw is just on the ground. And he actually said at the end of it in local language, he said, if you guys aren't really following Jesus, if you're serious about this, I'll come tomorrow and I'll explain more and invite your friends and we'll have a conversation. So the next day he shows up and there's about 15 of them that are there. And they're like, yeah, we understood yesterday. We want to follow Jesus. And again, he says, without me in the background, with no foreigner there, he says, if you're really, really serious, we'll take baptism on the third day. So come to this place in the river and I'll baptize you tomorrow. And 21 people were baptized on that third day and it changed his entire life. But that's the guy I would have described as the punk kid sitting on the back row of that training. And that's one example. Or got another key national partner. I would call him a peer these days, but he was probably about 30 years old. He was a pastor of a single church. His pastor that sent him out to start the next church said, don't you dare start a second church until you hit 1,000 people in your congregation. Once you hit 1,000, you can go to number two. But until then, just go after the mega church idea. And after 5-6 years of trying to get to 1,000, he was stagnant at 30 people. And he just couldn't grow his church past 30. In his own story, he would say he was ready to throw in the towel and go back to business because this church planting idea just isn't working. So come along with a little bit of training. The next Sunday after training, he stands up in front of his church and says, here's what it means to share your testimony in the gospel. Now, after church today, everybody go out different directions. And that afternoon, they had 46 green lights. And he says, in one afternoon, my entire church was able to more than double in size simply because I empowered the believers. It's guys like that that didn't have the vision initially, probably didn't have the vision for the next 3 years of actual multiplication, but started to take a step. And then when that step actually worked, he was ready to hear the next step and the next step and the next step, or yeah, different examples of that along the way. Man, most of the guys that you would call an all-star, they didn't start out as all-stars. They had character flaws. And I would even go back to Jesus' ministry. Man, if I'm picking the guys that are going to take over the world and lead out in this newfangled religion that Jesus is inaugurating, I'm not going to pick the 12 that he picked. They wouldn't make my short list. But somehow, over the course of Jesus' relationship with those 12, from a humanly perspective, he was able to see things in them and watch them grow so that they actually become the ones that inaugurate this new kingdom. Yeah,
and I'm going to agree with Michelle that I'm not sure I was the all-star when I showed up on the field either. So I'm glad that our supervisor allowed us to come and do our best and stumble around. And
the national partners that we met at that time were gracious towards us and said, hey, this guy, you know, talks like a third grader, but maybe we could hang out a little bit. We do. Now, let's be honest. We do get a little bit of an elevated status. We have some privilege that we carry in this culture, being from America. Particularly working in more rural or village settings, we do kind of get the red carpet laid out for us, and we do get a lot of deference because of where we come from. But that doesn't change the fact that we probably don't deserve that when we come out, in terms of what we're equipped to do, how well we're able to do it, especially in the language. Yeah. And so still there's a lot of national partners who showed us a lot of grace also to say, hey, maybe this person is worth working with. Maybe they got past that, hey, this is something beyond just a paycheck, and said, this is somebody that I really feel like the Lord is leading me to work with.
Yes. I think there's probably two big factors also in that. One is casting vision, and we do a training on God's vision, right? Casting vision for God's heart for the nations. A lot of times people have not heard that or seen that from the word. And so when we cast vision for God's heart for the nations, and you watch for the people who engage with that and whose eyes just light up and are like, yes, I didn't know that. Or yes, that is God's heart. And that's my heart because I'm God's child, or whatever that is, casting vision for his heart for the nations and watching people be engaged by that. And then after that, watching people with a willingness to do something new, to go to a new place, to try something new, to initiate something new. I feel like both of those are big factors in what we then eventually saw fruit come out of, because they were willing to go to a new place, to try something new, to do something new, to initiate something new. Not necessarily what we were telling them even, just I went out to this village and the framework was there, right? We need to go and we need to share. We need people to believe and we need to gather them together. The framework was there, but they went out and they said, well, in this village, I tried this because the people were kind of, you know, hard against this, and they found this bridge and they connected. And then they begin to see fruit because they had a willingness to go to new places and try new things after they heard God's vision and said, yes, that's also my vision. So I feel like those are two things that you can look for, that these people that have become really faithful and fruitful partners, they did have, like, they may not have had that when they walked in the room, but they began to engage with those two things, I think.
Jesse, just, I do think it's worth mentioning, when you start talking about all-stars, we probably be talking about maybe 5 or 10 guys, something like that. That would be the ones I would hold up, that these are all-stars, absolutely. But it's worth mentioning, I've actually run the numbers in our own ministry over the years. I function at an 8% success rate in my trainings. In other words, I stand up, I give a 3-day training, 8% of the people I teach are going to do anything with what I say. Yeah. That means out of 30 people in the room, I'm looking for two or three that do anything. I'm not talking about planting a church or even going to a new place. I'm talking about in a three-day training, maybe they try to go share their testimony with somebody. That's the initial bar. So then by the time we're mentioning or throwing around the term all-star, we're talking about a percentage of a percentage of a percentage of a percentage rolled out over years. And we'll talk about those 10 guys, and here's who they were at the beginning. Literally 10 or 20,000 people that we've trained, here are the 10 that we might talk about still today. And putting that in perspective and thinking through it as a first-termer, man, how do I meet enough people, put enough stuff in the top of the filter to actually filter down to a percent of a percent of a percent, that type of thing.
So, Jared, just to recap some of these highlights from your successful years on the field, you're partnering with Prosperity Preaching Punks with an 8% success rate.
Yeah. You actually filtered, you trained thousands to get to those Prosperity Preaching Punks that you then committed a, so many man hours and
time for them.
Good. Man, that sounds efficient.
That's going to encourage a lot of people, actually.
It is meant to paint a realistic picture that one of those misconceptions that we have is, on day one, when I walk into a new place, here's the first guy that comes up to me, tells me he's a Christian. He's going to become my best national partner for the next decade. Now, experience tells me that that could be the case, but probably not. You probably need to meet a whole bunch of people. So, if you're in your first term, go visit 10 different churches over the first 6 months that you're here or something like that. Just meet everybody you can, vision cast to everybody, try to look for any spark along the way. And when you get 10 or 20 or 30 people interested in something, then you go up Mark chapter 3 style on the mountainside. Let's pray through them. And God, out of all of these people that I know, who are the ones to spend more time with? And I'm looking for less than 12 for sure of folks that I can actually invest in, and probably more like 3 to 5 right now, something like that. So just putting it in perspective of how do we actually find a partner?
And if you're on the field long enough, you are going to invest a lot of time in people that don't end up being the right people. It's going to happen. And so you have to just be okay with that and still err on loving and being generous.
And also, I think, goes back to, as you're thinking about the efficiency or lack thereof of that statement, Michelle, something you said earlier, we never do anything alone. Hopefully, most of the ways that we're spending time with people is doing things we should be doing already, whether that's training or sharing the gospel or discipling. So that's not, in that sense, wasted time, right? I think that we're so scared of that sometimes, of wasting time. If I overcommit to this partner, then I'll end up having wasted all of this time. If we're mentoring and coaching in the right way, the way that Jesus did, which was on the way in the midst of ministry, then that's not wasted time, right? And that could even be a way that we find other people along the way, is pouring into these people that may not turn out to be the ones in the end, but we're just doing the things we should be doing anyway, right? Absolutely. Guys, there's so much, man. Just again, to affirm years of labor for you guys and love and all kinds of experience and knowledge. Anything that we've not touched on yet that you would say to people who are thinking through this topic, praying through, seeking maybe even right now, seeking the Lord to say, Lord, just give us some national partners, somebody to work alongside of. Any other words of wisdom or encouragement?
I think maybe only one thing that we haven't touched on completely that I would add is I've been reading some of Helen Rosevere recently, and something that I've just been struck by in her writings is the reality, the remembering that we are not better than our national partners. Just because we came from the West to do this work in this place, we aren't better. We're not looking for underlings. We've never used that term. We're looking for partners. We're looking for co-workers. We're looking for co-laborers, people to come alongside. And I have every bit as much to learn from them as they have to learn from me. And while I have an obligation to give to them what I have been given, to learn, I have an obligation to learn from them what they have to give me as well. Each one of these all-stars that you have mentioned are people that in our lives right now, we would go to them and say, what do we do about this? How do we do that regularly? How do we do this? Even when we go out into the field just to do your basic 0-1 EV in a new place, I have national partners that I'm like, I want to go with you because I want to listen to how you do this. 20 years in, I want to hear how you're going to share because I know I'm going to learn something again about how to engage the heart of this because you know these people better than we do. And so just remembering, we are not better. We are not looking for servants or underlings. We are looking for co-laborers, co-workers that can teach us as well. And so to enter it with absolute humility and graciousness.
Yeah.
Amen.
I think such a good word.
I think I would put an exclamation point on that and say, be careful of rationalizing everything. Somebody like me, I'm going to talk about numbers. I'm going to talk about a process. I'm a very logical type thinker, and I'm going to work this plan to death. That's just kind of my personality. At the same time, this is a God venture. And if God's not in it, man, we're up the creek from day one. So all these things are only by the grace of God. So we've got to go back to a healthy, abiding life. We got to pray everything through. We've got to pick the ones that to spend time with that wouldn't make our all-star list on day one, simply because God's asking us to spend time with that person. And it doesn't make sense logically, but man, God's telling me to, so I'm going to do it and follow his leading in this, not Don't reduce it just down to a formula. A plus B equals C. That's not how this is going to work.
So good.
That is, yeah, incredible. And I think, again, a deep well that we could spend hours drawing from with you guys. And I particularly appreciate, Michelle, how much you said coworkers, just throwing that out there in the midst of your comments. I know that was intentional. I know that's because you're a huge fan. So we just want to say thank you.
Yes,
you're welcome.
And I was thinking about, in terms of just learning, when you're spending time with national partners, how do I spend this time? What do they need? How can I help them? We have a tool called the 4 E's.
The essentials of missionary leadership.
Oh, sorry. Essentials of missionary leadership. But it talks about things like exemplifying for them that fatter coworker and encouraging them and equipping them and entrusting responsibility to them, which I think you guys have touched on all of those basically in this episode. So that might be something else that's helpful for listeners.
We should put that in the show notes.
We should. We will.
Guys, thanks so much. This has been awesome. Really appreciate you all and excited for people to hear from you.
Yep. Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you guys. Thanks for having us. We love you guys.